Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
So, Mara, as we discussed last week, Greg Rickhardt is headed back to Days as Leo for a brand new story. He is going to connect with someone on the canvas who he hasn't crossed paths with yet. But we spoke to Greg for an interview in our new issue, and he admits that he never really gave any thought to how long the gig would last. And here we are 4 years later, and he's still coming and going as Leo Stark. So Greg tells us he's thrilled because Leo was so much fun to play, and I could only imagine because certainly Leo was devious, he gets the best one-liners, he gets the best wardrobe, and there is some really good stuff coming up in this tale, so I would suggest everybody tune in next week for sure. But we will also continue to see him as Young and the Restless as Kevin, so that's great news as well.
Now, another topic we touched on last week was the can't-miss week GH had in store as the long road to comeuppance for the villainous Peter August finally came to an end. And in our new issue, the show's head writers, Chris Bennett and Dan O'Connor, spoke to me about how they executed the villain's demise. And they said that they always knew the final moment had to be between Anna and Peter. The story started with them and had to end with them. I have to give a huge shout out to Manola Hughes, who was so incredible in that chilling final scene between Anna and Peter. And I think it was absolutely the right choice to have Felicia come to Maxie's rescue. I have had several conversations with Christina Wagner, who plays Felicia, about Felicia, you know, having been an absentee mother to her girls, which really came out of Christina's comings and goings from the show, and the writers just kind of sending Felicia away and not necessarily doing the best job of addressing why she wasn't there for her daughters. So it's a regret that Christina has harbored, and I think it's one fans have harbored. And I think Felicia being such a key player here was a nice way to redeem Felicia as a mom. In any event, this brings Wes Ramsey's 4+ years on the show to quite the dramatic end, and he posted a very classy goodbye to the fans, saying that it had been a dream come true for him.
You know, I feel Wes has been classy throughout his whole run. You know, there has been such animus directed at him online, and when we had him on the podcast, I remember thinking he had such a good perspective on the situation. You know, I feel anyone who plays a villain knows that the audience is going to hate them or love to hate them, like in the case of Days as Ally Sweeney as Sammy in her more scheming years. But here, you know, some of these attacks felt more personal at times, and it seemed Wes really took it all in stride, and I really tip my hat to him for that. It cannot be easy. You know, I've spoken to actors through the years who have admitted that they'll try to like soften a scene or make their villainous character less so because they don't want the fans to hate them. And I think it must be a very difficult position to be in, especially now with feedback being so immediate.
I absolutely agree. You know, you have to have a really thick skin to be able to shake off that amount of criticism. Now, my experience of Wes is that he is an incredibly gentle and like sincere soul, and I truly wish him all the best in the future. One more thing I want to highlight for fans in our new issue is a section where we talk to actors who play BFFs, including YNR's Melissa Claire Egan and Liz Hendrickson, Chelsea and Chloe, and GH's Kelly Teabot and Perry Shen, who play Britt and Brad. I had so much fun doing that GH interview, and the whole section is like just a joy to read.
Oh, I loved it so much. You know, those are the kind of features that really appeal to me still, even, you know, as both someone who works at the magazine, but who also is a fan of the shows. I love knowing the real life connections that people have and just sort of hearing about the experience of like being friends and playing friends. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you. Please read it. Now back to Greg. So he isn't the only one on Young and the Restless who has been double dipping. Our guest today is Eileen Davidson, who plays the one and only Ashley Abbott in Genoa City, but has also reprised some of her many roles on Days. So let's get her on the line and see how it's all going. Hi, Eileen.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing really well. I'm happy to be here. I feel like I've been working with Soap Opera Digest since I was a little kid.
You have. Yes. Well, we're so excited. We've talked about you. Let's see. This is podcast 201, mm-hmm. and you have definitely been top on the list. So we're so excited to finally talk to you. So we're going to go back a little to your childhood. You were raised in a community in Southeast Los Angeles, but not in a showbiz family, but the youngest in a family of seven. So how would you describe your childhood?
It was loud. My dad and my mom and dad bought a house in La Mirada, and that's where I was raised, which was about 30 minutes from Huntington Beach and Disneyland. So we were at Disneyland a lot, and it was a very loud household, a lot of fighting, either laughing or screaming because of so many kids. And sports were always a big part of our lives. We had like a badminton court, and we had my father put in like a two-hoop basketball court in our backyard. We played volleyball, tetherball. We had a pool. So it was just like very typical Southern California, you know, upbringing. I went to Catholic school basically my whole life. And no showbiz. And I got bit rather late in life, I guess. And my mother went gray when I moved to Hollywood. She literally did. She literally turned gray.
Wow.
When you look back at little Eileen and her personality, do you see any hints that entertainment might be in her future?
I never really took drama or anything in school. I think I was in one play in the fifth grade. I had just three lines. So I never pursued it, even though I kind of had a love for it. Dressing up was always a big deal, and doing like a talent show thing. I would do that with a girlfriend. But basically, I never was in theater or anything. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were a model before you got into acting. So how did that come about, and what did you like and not like about it?
Well, I was a pseudo model because I was only 5'7", so I wasn't really tall enough to model per se. But I was actually, I mean, it doesn't get any more cliche than this. I was dancing. I had moved to Newport Beach when I was 17. I lived with my sister my senior year of high school. And I was dancing in a bar barefoot, and a photographer asked if he could, you know, take some pictures of me. And thank God he wasn't like a serial killer.
That could have gone horribly wrong.
I can't believe the stuff I did then. Yes. Okay. Let's take some pictures alone with you on the beach at 4 a.m. Please don't murder me. So I just took some shots. I ended up modeling in Newport Beach. I did like ski wear and bikinis and fashion shows down there. And so I was kind of just doing that kind of modeling, and I was living in Orange County. I was going to school at Orange Coast College. I was like a marine biology major, journalism major. I was all over the place. And I moved to Hawaii. A girlfriend of mine had moved there, and I went for 2 weeks and stayed for a couple months. And we didn't have a phone. We didn't have a TV. We didn't have a car. We were on the North Shore of Oahu, and I literally just spent a lot of time and decided I was going to move to Hollywood and give it a shot. And I ran out of money, so I took the bus into Waikiki, and I got a modeling job for Crazy Shirts, which was a catalog for like vacation wear, t-shirts. And I earned my airfare back home. And then I moved to Hollywood a couple months after that. And I actually, my stepson is one of them, is really into, he wrote a book, and he was really into self-discoveries. 26 now, and really into following your instincts and doing what you want to do in your life. He's kind of found his passion during COVID. So I was telling him, I'd gone through some old papers, and I found something I'd written when I was in Hawaii, where I said, I'm totally on my own. I don't live at home anymore. I don't have a boyfriend. I'm going to move to Los Angeles. I have a hunch.
Wow.
I know. And I didn't remember writing that. I happened to find this literally just a couple months ago, and I got chills. I went, what? I had nothing, really nothing to go on. I had, you know, I didn't know anybody in Los Angeles. I had, you know, it was crazy. I don't know how I did it. It's like, I don't even know who that was anymore.
Wow.
I had balls. I guess I had some balls.
I guess you got to develop that in a family of seven.
You know, it's weird.
Yeah. So how did you go about finding your footing in this industry, especially knowing no one, as you said, going on a hunch?
Well, I had started modeling in Orange County, as I said, and one of the girls I was modeling with was moving up to LA. And we decided to get an apartment together with a guy that she knew. And so it was like a threes company in reverse. And it wasn't really done that often that you had male roommates back then. He was an actor, and he suggested that I take an acting class for commercials and such. So I took an acting class, and I ended up falling in love with it. And I cried my first time on stage. And it kind of changed the course of my entire existence. And guess what? At that acting class, Peggy McKay was one of my teachers.
Oh my God. Wow. That's crazy.
She was one of my very first teachers.
That's so sweet. So you must have had a nice reunion then, years later.
We did. And I told her, I said, you know, you were, and she was like, I hope I was a good teacher. I'm like, you were an amazing teacher.
You're like, look where I am now. You were
great. Passionate. Such a sweetheart.
That's amazing. Truly.
Well, in 1982, you were one of about 100 women who were seen for the role of Ashley Abbott on Young and the Restless. So tell us your why in our casting story. And did you want the job, or was it just another audition for you?
Oh, no, I wanted a job. I was, at the time, a year before that, I'd been waiting tables at a restaurant in Westwood. And I was working for my father. I was cleaning the toilets of the acting studio for free acting classes. So I was busting my buns. So yeah, are you kidding me? I just wanted to work. And actually, Marvin Page was the casting director in General Hospital. He took a liking to me. And he would just have me in. He would work with me for hours. He was trying to get me on GH for so long. And I got very close on a couple of the roles. But he helped me really in just working with me and stuff. He was a terrific casting person. He really took a, you know, hands-on approach, at least with me. But anyway, so I read for the role of Ashley, and I'd lost my contact lens the day of my screen test. I had one lens. And I had a scene with Terry Lester and one with Jerry Douglas. And in the scene, Terry, I was supposed to walk between him and the sofa and the table. And he put his legs up on the table, so I couldn't get by. And we hadn't practiced that or rehearsed that. So I just kicked his legs out of the way. And I swear to God, that has a lot to do with why I got the role, because it kind of established our relationship. And I could only see out of one eye.
And I guess it's especially fortunate you kicked the leg and not something more sensitive.
Exactly. Yeah. I could have missed if it's something else.
So Ashley was a very high impact character from the beginning. You know, so many complex relationships with her family members, a very rocky love life, her professional endeavors. It seems, you know, obvious that William J. Bell was very inspired by her and very inspired by you. What stands out to you when you think about what it was like to come onto the show and to first step into Ashley's shoes and establish her?
Right. Well, it was very exciting. First working with Jerry and Terry, and they were so welcoming. And I mean, at Jerry's memorial, I made a joke about the fact that, I mean, honestly, they were so loving and incredible, inviting us over, Beth and I, over to their houses, and we'd sing at the piano, and, you know, we'd hang out. And I said they were so thrilled, but obviously getting a family on a soap is money. So they were very happy they were getting a family. But also they were incredibly sweet and welcoming. It was great. You know, there was a lot of excitement around it, because I guess the Brooks family was being eased out. So there was kind of almost a feeling of new kid in town. I mean, I don't think I didn't really understand the gravity of it, really, what it really meant, and how it was really kind of opening up a new, kind of a whole new road on The Young and the Restless, a whole new avenue, and how the family was going to become dominant for so many years to come.
As you mentioned, Jerry, the daytime community recently lost a true legend in Jerry Douglas. So tell us about your relationship with him.
Well, you know, again, Jerry was just so sweet. He couldn't have been any more loving and welcoming, and made it such a warm and safe place to be creative. That's what I would say. I mean, I grew a lot as an actress, tremendous amount my first few years on the show. I mean, I don't think I've ever stopped growing. I hope to God I don't. But especially then, it was a safe environment to, like, you know, practice your craft and to bring yourself to the role. You were encouraged to bring yourself to the role and to experiment, And to be able to do that in a warm and safe environment was really everything for a young actor.
I bet. Absolutely.
Jerry was just loving. You know, he was just so sweet. But the funny thing about Jerry is, you know, he was my father on screen, but off screen, he was my friend. And, you know, I mean, he was young. When you think back now, he was only in his early 40s. I thought he was so ancient. And he was a young guy. And he ended up marrying one of my good friends, Kim. Mm-hmm. And she was my age. I met Kim through him. But, I mean, so they were like, you know, we would double date, which was funny.
That's really sweet. Well, the trauma of Ashley's discovery that her biological father was Brent Davis led her into one of the most iconic love triangles in soap opera history, Ashley, Victor, Nikki. Why do you think that caught fire with fans the way that it did?
Hell if I know. I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand the formula. That's why, especially as I've gotten older, I'm like, Bill Bell was a freaking genius. He just was a genius. I mean, I have so much respect for him. In his writing and his choice of writers, tremendous talent in how to craft a story and make you root for all sides. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy. And you had so many people pulling for Ashley, and he would write something that would make her look villainous, but then Nikki would do something that was really crappy. And then you'd feel for Ashley, which you wouldn't think you would. But because of how the story was written, he could just manipulate people. You know, it was really a fascinating thing to see it, especially in retrospect, because when you're playing it, you don't really see it. Mm-hmm. Like her having the abortion and in the range, how she's saying she's not strong enough to be a single mother in 1985, I'm saying this, and choosing to have an abortion was like really shocking.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. That was an interesting thing, because I know there was a correlation, and this bothered me at the time. Talking about reproductive rights, it kind of bothered me that she kind of went a little Looney Tunes after that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like the correlation between she got an abortion and she went nuts. So I always would, in interviews at the time to Soap Opera Digest, I would always, and whoever, I would always say, you know, it was more about her losing the love of her life and losing her life, that what she thought she could have had is what did it. I hated that direct correlation between abortion and it bothered me.
Because Ashley was so dominant and you were so popular, you were on a lot of Soap Opera Digest covers in the 1980s, some of my favorites with your fabulously permed hair. So first of all, do you ever miss it? And what stands out to you sort of about the glamour of that era?
Do I ever miss my permed hair?
Yeah.
Your hair. That I would say no, I don't miss my permed hair. Yeah, I mean, you know, Soap Opera Digest, we were so spoiled. We used to have these food laid out, and I think there was even alcohol involved. Probably you guys had nothing to do with that. But we got presents from Tiffany's afterwards. I mean, it was really first class all the way. And it was fun. You know, the music was blaring. They'd bring in racks of fantastic clothes. And I mean, I was spoiled rotten. I did this for decades, this kind of photo shoots. You know, and for me, frankly, I was always one of those women. I was in and out. You know, I had a very, I loved that, but I also had a life, and I always want to get back to my life. So I was always like, let's get the shot. Let's come on, up. I'm going to wear this. I'm going to wear that. Don't be late. We're going to get in. We're going to get out. I've just always been that way. This is not something that happened overnight. I've just always been that way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I enjoyed it, but I also, you know, kind of enjoyed getting back to my life.
Fair enough. Do you have a favorite story that was told with Ashley from your first chunk of years on the show, where she did have a lot of iconic romances, family drama, all that good stuff?
Yeah. I loved it when she found out that John Abbott wasn't her father. I thought that was a great twist. I don't think anybody saw that one coming because of how the relationship was established so early on between them. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was fun. It was fun to have something so, you know, hard left in the story. And I always wondered why they didn't mine it more. You know, it was like, I never understood that. It was so strange to have established that. And then, I don't know, who knows? I wish I could have found that out because I didn't understand it. But that was a great storyline, as was the triangle, finding out, you know, hearing that Nikki had a disease or she was going to die and then she's lying. And all that was just such good soap opera stuff, just such great stuff to sink your teeth into.
You left Young and Restless for the first time after a 6-year run, and you actually found your replacement, Brenda Epperson. Can you tell us that story?
I can. I had been planning on leaving, and I was at a charity fashion show, I believe, and Brenda was a waitress there. And she came up to me and she said that people told her that she looked like me. And I said, well, I'm leaving the role. And I gave her my number and I said, you know, I'll help you out, whatever. So she called me like a year later and I gave her some tips and she got the role. It's crazy.
Wow. That's amazing. Could have had a side hustle finding Eileen Davidson lookalikes for any role you might depart. Okay, so I was going through your Instagram and I found the most incredible promo art for what appears to be one of your first post-YNR projects, a little TV movie called Sharing Richard.
Well, I was actually on YNR when I did that.
Oh, okay, all right. What is a better tagline than this? Three best friends, three very different lives, one too many things in common. They're sharing Richard. So Richard was played by Ed Marinaro, and your character's two best friends, and I guess Richard Sharers, were played by two other daytime stars, Hilary B. Smith of World Turns and One Life to Live fame, and Nancy Frangione, who played Cecile on Another World. A, I've got to get my hands on this movie. And B, what stands out to you about that project?
Well, I know that Hill and I bonded during that film. I mean, Nancy was great too, but Hill and I just kind of got each other and we became really good friends after that. So that was a lot of fun. We were on location in Houston. Just a lot of fun. Peter Bonners, who used to be on the Newhart show, directed it. So it was just kind of a hoot. It was just a really fun thing. I was gone for a month. I remember I found out I was shooting a scene on YNR when I don't know how I got a call in the studio that I'd got the role. So that was kind of a fun thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Well, as you were branching out in your career, did you encounter any stigma towards your soap credit or feel like you weren't taken as seriously because you'd been on a soap? Because the 80s were different a little that way.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I mean, I guess so. I don't know. I kind of went through a very early midlife crisis after I left YNR. I ended up taking time off instead of, you know, probably should have been out there more trying to get work, but I ended up kind of just like taking time off for like a year. But I did do a movie with John Voight. I did a movie with Paul LaMatte right when I'd left the show. So I'd done a couple of features and then, I took a year off and then I got Broken Badges, the series with Ernie Hudson and Miguel Ferrer and Jay Johnston. So that was fun. So I did that for a few months up in Vancouver. And that was great. I suddenly got these roles playing, after being a chemist all those years, I got the two roles, one in a movie and one on a series of being like a motorcycle mama. It was very strange. All of a sudden I was riding a motorcycle all the time. I'm like, okay, whatever.
From lab coats to leather jackets, the Eileen Davidson story. Yeah. So when Broken Badges came to an end, we got you back on daytime on Santa Barbara as Kelly Capwell toward the end of that show's run. We just had A. Martinez on the podcast and he spoke so highly of, yes, we sure did. And he absolutely loved working with you, clearly. What stands out to you about the Santa Barbara experience?
Oh, it was such an interesting time because I guess the show obviously was on its last legs and Paul Rausch was bringing people in from every show. Kim Zimmer, A was already on that show. Kim Zimmer, Nancy Grahn, I guess she'd already been on the show. Who else did he bring in? Jack Wagner.
Stephen Nichols briefly.
Nichols, me, Charles Grant, just all these people. At one point I remember I went to his office because I didn't have any story. I worked with A and I loved working with A. He's such a pure actor. He's just such a pure giving human being and such a, translates to his acting. I remember going up and talking to Paul. I said, I feel like you're collecting butterflies and we're pinned to a wall, but I've got nothing to do. So I wasn't super excited about that last year in terms of working, except the fact I got to work with these amazing people, really incredibly talented people. So that was fun. That was an interesting year.
Well, in 1993, you created the role of Kristen on Days of Our Lives, and your journey on that show is pretty incredible as well. Another character with tremendous impact on the show and arguably the whole trajectory of that soap. Your roster of Salem alter egos would ultimately expand to include Susan, Penelope, Sister Mary Mora, and Thomas. So did you have any sense of how major Kristen was going to be when you started?
Well, no, because she was the heroine. She was a good girl and kind of bland. You know, well, not really that blind when I think about working with Drake. I mean, the John and Kristen scenes. I can't believe the stuff that we got away with. I mean, my niece was watching some clips. My niece is like 33. She goes, this was on television? I'm like, I know. what the heck they were thinking. I mean, I'm not a prude, but I can't believe some of the stuff we did. Mm-hmm. Pretty intense, right?
Yes.
When I think back, I'm so thoroughly embarrassed. So she was kind of a do-gooder, you know, and kind of boring. And after a year of, we've got Eileen Davidson here, whatever that means, nothing really was happening. And I was just like frustrated and a little bitchy. I was just like, I've got nothing to do on the show. And then, you know, they make her bad, which was the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I mean, I'd played bad when I was first starting my career in a couple horror movies I'd done. I was kind of typecast as a bitch. And then that all changed. So then when I got to kind of embrace that part of myself again, I just ran with it. I had so much fun. It was my idea, by the way, to play both. They were going to cast somebody else, possibly Brenda, to come in for a short story of Susan.
Wow.
And I was like, can I play both roles? And so that's where it kind of took off. And then Jim Reilly apologized to me after I left. Because, I mean, I was working. I had 80 pages of dialogue one day, you guys. One day. And I see pictures of myself on my last day. I was in shock. I was exhausted. We worked on Saturdays then.
Oh, my gosh.
It's pretty intense. So he apologized. He said he was just very inspired by the characters. And thank God, because, I mean, it was a lot of fun. It's not something I could have done forever. Clearly, it's why I left. But it was a great, great thing. And it changed my career.
I mean, obviously, your work as Susan stands out, I think, in part because it was such a contrast to how fans had seen you before in this glamour, you know, image that was sort of crafted from you in the 80s. Like, did you enjoy, I guess?
Oh, my God.
Tapping into that? Yeah.
Of course. Anybody that knows me knows that's kind of who I am. I guess, you know, from playing the sophisticated Ashley or whatever, you didn't really see that. But I mean, yeah, I mean, my family's funny. They're always goofy. They were always putting on shows and, you know, singing songs and crazy. So, yeah, I mean, I've always been kind of a goofball and nobody knew that. So I kind of got to share that with the world. It wasn't difficult at all for me to be goofy. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a hard, you know, transition to play her. It was basically just fake teeth. It was like, it must have taken you hours to look like that. I'm like, not at all. I had a good time. I had a great, great time bringing Susan to life and then bad Kristen too. It was so much fun.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of those teeth, I feel like one of the most iconic Days moments was them flying out of her mouth at the wedding. You know, what do you remember about that nightmare in Graceland, I feel they called it.
I think I remember trying to get the toss right because it was in slow motion and had to fall into a champagne glass. So I just remember that. And they pulled it off beautifully. Also, I think one of my very favorite scenes was when Kristen and Marlena were locked in together in the secret room, mm-hmm. and they had a cat fight and they're throwing each other. It looks so stupid too, because we're like going really high in the air, like that would really happen. Like very, very, very funny. Funny, very, you know, it's a very campy show, mm-hmm. and you don't play the camp, but it was a fun thing to do. Very different. I remember one time as Susan, she was having some kind of a nightmare, which was happening a lot with Susan. And I was in this like weird little black tent that they had me doing all these weird things and saying things with my fake teeth and screaming. And I remember looking at the camera and saying, this is going to be on television, people. Don't you care? So absurd. It was so absurd. I was always in lingerie. I'm lingerie as Satan. I mean, I'm the devil in lingerie. And then when they asked me to come back and I was basically doing the devil in lingerie again, I went, really? What is it with you guys and Satan and Kristen and lingerie? I know.
Yep. So. Some things are just timeless, Eileen. What can we tell you? So Kristen was on that show, the adopted daughter of Stefano DiMera, played by the late Joseph Mascolo. What's your favorite memory of Joe?
I don't know. I mean, I have so many. He was a very, very brusque, kind of domineering presence, but basically just a pussycat. I mean, he loved the show so much. He loved working so much. And we had a fantastic dynamic. I loved the fact that Kristen would kind of cower with him, but also come back and strike at him. It was kind of a nice thing. And he was just a consummate professional, super easy to work with. Very, very funny. He'd always bring out the accents and stuff.
Yeah, I always say he was the person who intimidated me the most when I started covering the show, and yet he was such a teddy bear and so sweet. And
yes.
the opposite of what my perception of him was. Mm-hmm. So how did you react when you heard that they were creating the roles of Sister Mary, Thomas, and Penelope?
Well, you know, I was really excited about it. It was intimidating. I was super busy in those days. But I didn't have a lot of time. I would have preferred more time because to, you know, flesh out these characters, to make them as good as I would like to have made them. I do remember when the Thomas thing came, I immediately knew I wanted to do a comb over. So I got the comb over, and as soon as I found out I was playing the nun, I was like, get me a ruler. Because I mean, my older siblings went to school, parochial school as well, and they had stories of being their knuckles hit with the ruler. That never happened to me. But I just thought, even though maybe she wasn't that mean, but she was always threatening that she could go there. So and when I came back to the show and I was playing Sister, Kristen was playing Sister Mary, I actually just brought my own ruler from home. That wasn't written in. I just brought it. You know, because that's how I find the character. So I'm like, I've got my own ruler, Ron. I texted him. He was like, exclamation points. I'm like, yeah. Anyway, so back to that. Yeah, so it was exciting for me. I loved to be able to do something so different. You know, I've always felt like I was a character actress that was kind of trapped in this leading lady, you know, persona thing because of the casting. So it was a kind of an opportunity. Obviously, it was an opportunity for me to kind of just, you know, get my yayas out, have some fun.
Totally. And we had a lot of fun with you having a lot of fun. Well, Kristen was also quite the thorn, as we've sort of hinted at in the sides of John and Marlena. So what are your like standout memories, I guess, of working so closely with Drake Hogeson and Deidre Hall on that story?
You know, I loved being the spoiler. I thought it was fun. I mean, Drake was great to work with, loved working with Drake. He was so happy to have, you know, a change in story. You kind of get sick of doing the same thing. So it was kind of a breath of fresh air to be able to do something different. And we had great chemistry. We worked really, really well together. Dee and I had great chemistry. We had a lot of fun. We still do, actually. So it was fun. I really enjoyed it. I know that the fans had a hard time with it. Those hardcore Marlena, John Black fans. Oh my God. That is like a whole different animal, people. And I had death threats against me.
Oh God.
And one woman was taken out of one of the fan events by security. She had threatened me and said she was going to knife me. And she was writing me on a regular basis, threatening me. And she wrote something, so I figured out that she was at one of the fan events. That's when we used to have them like every year. So security had to get involved. They had to read all the letters because there was a threat. And they found her and they carried her out in the middle of the next fan event. She was screaming, I'm harmless. And then I've had a lot of weird things like that. I've had to be accompanied to my car by security. I had people, yeah. So, yeah, that was weird. And by the way, that's the same time that I stopped answering fan mail because I hope people are listening to this, that if they've written and they haven't gotten responses, I've actually been told not to respond because you never know mm-hmm. what gets in somebody's mind. And it's just not something you want to joke around with. And when I've had like three things. Prisoners would write me knowing my route home. So there was like just some weird things. So it just made me kind of say, I better listen to these people, right. The security, the people that deal with this fans.
Well, you did depart Days of Our Lives in one of the most classic soap switcheroos between Kristen and Susan. You know, poor Kristen wound up in that harem for quite a while. but in 1999, you made your return to Young and the Restless. So how did your Genoa City comeback come about?
I always joked about this too. It was funny. Don Diamont, I think he called me and said that they would be interested in me coming back to the show. And I was not at all where my head was at. I'd left Days the year before. It was the first time I said, that's not at all where I saw me going. I don't know why. I just didn't see that. And so then I said, I guess give me a call. And then it worked out.
So we owe it to Don. Okay. Yeah. Noted.
Yeah. Don facilitated it.
So that was your, I think, first time working with Peter Bergman. Is that correct?
Yes.
Who I know there's a lot of mutual admiration going on there. Tell us about working with Peter.
Yeah, it was great. Amazing. I had seen him socially over the years at events. And he was like always saying, I'd love to have a chance to work with you sometime. And I'm like, I know, blah, blah, blah. Sweet guy, always just sweet. And then, you know, we just clicked right out of the gate. We're just so lucky when you have that kind of relationship and chemistry with somebody. I don't take it for granted. It's such a beautiful thing. And just to this day, it's like, you know, fresh air working with Pete. He's just super easy, super natural. I know he's got my back. I've got his back. I can always count on him. We remind each other sometimes when you're working all the time, you can forget subtleties, and we can remind each other of what needs to be played without offending the other. Not that we do it a lot, but hey, asshole, you missed that beat. you know, sometimes you're like, this is what's happening, you know, just to remind, like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I'll say, you know, could you maybe do this because it would help me with that. And it's a nice thing. It's a luxury. It's great.
So after Y&R, you made your way to Bold and Beautiful. Tell us how that happened.
Best kept secret. I love that show so much. And Brad called me and asked me if I wanted to come over. I'd gotten fired from Y&R. And like a month later, he called and said, do you want to come on the show? I'm like, yeah, it sounds like fun. So I went over there, and everybody's so lovely, such a lovely, really well, sweetly produced show. Just lovely people, just great. I had a fantastic experience. I loved working with Ron. I love the Ridge Ashley thing. I thought we had terrific chemistry. That could have gone somewhere. You know, that was a really strange time because of being fired. And then that person wasn't there anymore. And then I got asked back to Y&R. And it's just strange, strange.
Yeah, there's always like a ultimately off-screen drama that somewhat rivals the on-screen, you know.
Somewhat.
Mishigas, as my people would say.
Oh, all sorts of things going on.
Well, skipping ahead just a little bit, in 2012, you made quite the triumphant return to Days of Our Lives, which ultimately landed you quite deservedly on the Daytime Emmy podium, accepting the Lead Actress Trophy. Tell us what it was like to step back into the shoes of Kristen in such a fantastic fashion.
Okay. Let's say this. You know, I'm just going to say it. I was fired again from Y&R, but I was told that Days of Our Lives wanted me. A little weird. Without any notice. I was just kind of, this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I was a little bitter. I'm not going to lie. So I was watching Super Soul Sunday with Oprah. And they were talking, she was talking about, somebody was talking that was on the show about how to be open to every experience that you're presented with, and to be grateful, and you never know what's going to, and to just experience it with an open heart and open mind. I said, I am not going to go back on this show being bitter. I am just going to embrace it and see where we go. And it was the best thing that's ever happened to me. I was to show you. Literally, it was one of the best things that's ever happened to me. And I remember sitting next to Martzoff in the makeup chair when I first came back, and we had a bunch of scenes together, and I was like, why am I working with him? I don't understand. Nobody told me a thing. Why am I working with him? I thought I'd be working with, you know, Drake. I also thought I'd be coming back more as Susan. I didn't know they were focusing so much on Kristen. So I didn't know anything. And then I was there for a year. I signed a year deal. And the story was so fantastic. Chris Weitzel wrote that, and he wrote the hell out of it. And the character was so fantastic. And they let me have free reign. And I got to really flesh out Kristen and her vulnerability. And she was like, I called her the psychopath with a heart of gold, because she could justify everything she did for all the right reasons. You know, what do you mean? Of course I had to sleep with the priest. I had to. I had to do with that. So I could justify everything she did. It was written so beautifully. And Martzoff and I had great chemistry. And who knew that? I didn't know this guy from Adam. Right. And we just ran with it and had such a great time. And the writing was terrific. And I had, you know, the time of my life. I had so much fun that year. Mm-hmm. And Martzoff and I both won Emmys. It was just a fantastical experience all the way around. Right. Don't take it for granted. I really appreciate it.
Well, let's not give your Emmy win short shrift. What was the experience like of hearing your name called?
I felt like even if I didn't win, I knew that my work was really terrific that year, and I felt really good about my work. And it was a kind of a really good feeling of being satisfied knowing that. So that was exciting. I was super excited about it, especially for that year. I loved that year so much, and I loved the work so much. I loved how crazy she was. And how vulnerable she was. So it was just really fun for me. I had a great time.
I think of your work as like typifying the phrase, understanding the assignment, you know, like I think your embrace of it was so strong and just what a fun story to experience as a viewer.
I had no idea what it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just didn't know. There was no prep. Literally, I was up in the office. I said, we're not going to have you on Young and Roses, but Days wants you. And 2 days later, I got a call from Days. It was like, okay.
Yeah, pretty wild. Know. Well, 2014 was also a memorable year insofar as you joined the cast of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I freaking fell in love with the real Eileen Davidson, or that version, I guess, of the real Eileen Davidson so much.
I did. I'm going to cry.
What stands out to you, I guess, about that wild experience?
What doesn't stand out? I mean, are you serious? I mean, you know, first of all, the funny thing is when I won that Emmy on Days of Our Lives, they had reached out to me to possibly be on The Housewives. And I said, you know, I'm nominated for an Emmy. And I remember Chris Collins saying, well, you know, it's too bad we can't film you. I said, well, I guess you could, technically. So they came up and they filmed me getting ready, and they feel like they couldn't go in, and they filmed me coming out with the Emmy. That was just me saying, hey, you know, why don't you just come and film? And Chris jumping on it saying, let's just do it in case you are on the show. Thank God, I won. that was, you know, I don't know. My sister had just died and my niece had just died literally weeks before I got the phone call. And I've always been kind of attracted to, obviously, playing the five characters and whatever, to things that scared me. And The Housewives was completely new frontier. And I figured you only live once. I'd lost two very important people in my life. I'm like, you know what? Whatever. I'm just going to give it a try. I can always leave. I can see it for a year. And if I hate it, I'll leave. So that was the motivation for doing that. Plus, Lisa was on it, Lisa Renna. We ended up having a lot of fun together. It was very strange. It's a very strange world. And I approached it like a reality show, but I was kind of like the only one. I was really like, I really was. I mean, I would show up at things like wearing real life clothes. And I remember Kyle's barbecues. Oh, just a barbecue. So I'd come in like a beach dress. Everybody's like a gown. I'm like, so Kyle, you just told me like, you know, summer dress and you're wearing like a silk caftan. So it's like, I would always dress the opposite of whatever she said after that. But so there was definitely a learning curve. You know, and I never really did learn the curve, let's face it. But it was interesting. It was one of the most interesting experiences of my life, for sure. And I learned a lot about other people and what they're capable of, and me too. And it was just fascinating. Mm-hmm. I'm still learning. I still don't know everything. I really don't. I was in shock for quite a while, and I'm still processing things.
Wow. Yeah.
And I really am, because what happens... on camera, what happens off camera, where I see them evolving, the women now, and it's just interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that sense, because you did go into it sort of not knowing, what was it like when you would watch the show's episodes play back? Like, was there anything that came as a surprise to you or something on the
show? Oh, sure. They kind of, they edited it and they would kind of control the narrative a little bit. For me, kind of being kind of like a hick, which was kind of interesting. I don't know. It was kind of funny. I was like, they would kind of like play up things and play down other aspects of my life to make me look more a certain way. It was interesting. I was like, but that's not true. That's not who I am. But they would just like to play up that. Also, I found one of these funny things. It was like so annoying. I'm used to being on camera. And a lot of the reason why I brought shitty purses is because on a TV show, you can wear a shitty purse. Nobody's ever going to know that it's a shitty purse. It's TV. So you'd have like a crappy purse. They're never going to know. I'm on a show all the time. I don't wear like, you know, but I wasn't planning on getting called out for it. I figure like it's a TV show that nobody's going to know my crappy purse. Wrong. Not to mention overalls. By the way, I brought them back, you guys. I got a lot of crap from my jumpsuits and my overalls. And I'm not lying. A year later, have we not seen jumpsuits and overalls everywhere?
Everywhere.
But a lot of crap for that too. I'm like, excuse me. Yes. Why were you wearing a suit on a trip to Dubai? Come on. Anyway. Oh, and the other thing that was just totally cracking me up. I'm also used to having a hairstylist. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I'd be on camera, just like I'd be like, you know, I'm on a reality show. And this is how I am. And they're like, have their glam squads. I'm like, they would do an over the shoulder shot of like, I'm having lunch with somebody, and the back of my hair wouldn't be brushed. Cause I don't look at the back of my hair. I have a hairstylist that does that for me. Camera guys will say your back of your hair needs a touch up. So I was like fixated. I'm like, oh my God, my hair looks like crap from the back. Nobody's like, nobody has your back. Nobody's like, oh, you know what? Your hair looks really bad from the back. I mean, you might want to comb it before we shoot the scene. You know? Mm-hmm. Not to mention, like, I'd be sitting, they would light us for a scene, and I have a good side and a bad side. So they would put me in this spot, and then I'd be working with somebody who shall remain nameless, and that person would take my spot. We'd rehearse it when I'd be on a certain spot, and then that person took my spot. And me, because I just didn't want to mess up flow and like make it go a longer day. I just went along with it. But I'm like, wow, you're kind of on your own. You're kind of on your own. Interesting.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
That's why I needed a lot of time to decompress and go, okay. And then also I believe that they're telling, so funny because Michelle, I'm working on YNR today, and Michelle was asking me all these questions. And she goes, do you mind? I said, no. If I hadn't been on the show and you had been, I'd be torturing you for information. I'm still kind of processing it now, you know, because it's just strange.
Well, you're talking about big Bravo fans here, so we could probably go on all day. Yeah.
I don't have any regrets of having done it. I know I got a lot of people, how could you do that? And what were you thinking? I'm like, why not? You gave it a go, whatever. Mm-hmm. Obviously, my kids, whenever if any of them or Vinny had ever said, we don't want to be doing this, I would have been off in a second. And actually, towards the end, my son, who was only 11 when we started, and I think 13, 14, people would ask him, isn't your mom on The Housewives? I've seen you on The Housewives. And he would go, no. And he'd walk away. So he was having a hard time. He goes, I don't want to be famous because my parents are. I don't want to be in the limelight because you guys are. He just still that way at 18. He just, as he started getting older, became more aware of it, and he didn't like it.
Yeah, well, it is really, obviously, just been wonderful these past couple of years to have you back on YNR. You took part in the beautiful story of the Alzheimer's, for example, and then on the Days side, to have you back in action, both popping up on the main series and also taking part in the Peacock streaming spinoff. So what was it like for you to shoot A Very Salem Christmas?
It was fun. I mean, Beyond Salem was super, super fun when that came about. That was just a call out of the blue. It was crazy. They actually asked me to come back for the Satan thing. And I had a lot of reservations about it because of the, you know, the lingerie and Kristen again with the freaking Satan thing. And at first I was like, I don't want to play that up, but I'm not comfortable. I'm not sure if I want to do that. And then I thought about it because of my age too. I'm like, you really want to see it? And I said, you know what? Screw that. I'm just going to jump back in. And I'm going to commit, and I'm not going to be afraid. And it kind of scares me. So then I had to do it. So, and I'm really grateful and really happy that I did. It was really fun to kind of go back and test those waters again with that crazy storyline. And then the Beyond Salem thing came across where they do the tongue in cheek about the Housewives. I love that. I love seeing Lisa and working with Lisa Renna. That felt so incredibly natural. I love her. And I had so much fun with her doing that. And just working with Ken again and Albert Alar and Ron Colabotti, and just, it was tremendous. I loved it. And working with Drake, it was fun.
Well, as hard as it is to believe, this year marks the 40th anniversary of your Young and Restless debut.
So first of all, true? Yeah. I didn't even know that. Really?
So can you even wrap your mind around that number?
I can't. I was just seeing my mother-in-law yesterday. She's 91 soon. Wow. And we were talking about how we don't feel any different than we did like 20, 30 years ago. It's so weird. It's such a strange thing. But yeah, I that's shocking. I'm very lucky. I'm a very blessed person. I'm super grateful.
Well, before we let you go, could you even like put into words what this incredible career that you've had in daytime television has meant to you personally and professionally since you landed the role of Ashley almost in June, 40 years will be your debut. Years. Amazing.
Also, I've left so many times and done other things.
Yeah.
And I've had so many interesting experiences. And I met my husband on The Young and the Restless. When I came back to the show, I was like, you know, I didn't really, like I just told you guys, I wasn't really seeing my life going there. But now in retrospect, clearly it makes perfect sense. Life is weird. When you've been around enough, long enough on the planet, you kind of go, oh yeah. That's why that happened. I mean, if that's the only reason I came back was to meet Vincent and have my son and my two incredible bonus stepsons. It's everything. You know, I've had an amazing, you know, we've been married almost 20 years.
Wow.
And have a great life. And I have great in-laws, and it's been a very rich experience. So, yeah, I mean, the show's obviously been huge. And, you know, thank you, Bill Bell and Lee and all the Bells. And just the whole experience here has been quite unbelievable, and just the many branches it's kind of taken.
I'm sure there will be many more of them in the months and years ahead. And we thank you so much for sharing everything today, Eileen. It was so great to catch up with you and just hear all your stories.
I'm so grateful to you and to Soap Opera Digest for all the great times and great memories and really spectacular articles and covers.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Eileen Davidson for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.